Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today it's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So, June, I think it's June when we hear the most bird song. It just seems like it gets, you know, kind of ramps up, and June seems to be the big chorus.
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. There are some migrants that actually don't get back until just about June. And so by June 1st, pretty much the gang's all here. You know, there's some flycatchers like eastern wood pewees or late migrants. And so you wouldn't be hearing those in the first half of May. And so, yeah, everybody's here. Everybody's breeding. And so, yeah, I think that's a good guess. This is when everybody's here and everybody's making their songs. And it's a great time of year. I mean, you know, in birding terms, you might think it's the doldrums now, like, oh, migration's over, what a bummer. But really, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and I know we'll get to some of that later.
Yeah. So you've been talking about this for a long time. You've suspected that bald eagles were nesting on Cape Cod, and now confirmation, and we have a bald eagle chick in Barnstable.
Yes, right. And so that's been the standard. You know, that's been the evidence that I've been waiting for anyway. There have been some eagles that have acted like they were nesting. They've built nests. It was very exciting. And then nothing came of it. You know, and we're not sure what happened. Nobody is going and, like, climbing the trees and looking into the nests and looking at what happened. And so we don't know what happened with those other nesting attempts. But this was it. This was, you know, a chick in the nest poking its head up. They did it. Bald eagles finally nesting on the Cape in the modern era. And so the last bald eagle nest in Massachusetts before they were extirpated from the state in 1905 was in Sandwich, oddly enough. But, you know, this is, you know, 40 years into the recovery or something like that. It was in the 80s when they started recovering bald eagles in Massachusetts by taking chicks from other states and putting them in artificial nests at the Quavon Reservoir. Mass Wildlife and Mass Audubon were both involved. Excuse me. And so that was, you know, that's a long time ago now, and the population really skyrocketed, especially in recent years. And we've been seeing them more and more on the Cape. They're, you know, bald eagles are here year-round, and that's been the case for many years now. You can see juveniles any time of year, and we've been seeing adults at that telltale time of year when they should be nesting, which is late winter. But no successful nests until now. And I'm not going to say where it is in Barnstable. I've been sworn to secrecy by the state and there's, you know, people that live in this area. And I think there are some people who figured it out on their own. I think it was out there on social media a little bit. But anyway, it's in the vastness of Barnstable somewhere. And it wasn't one of the places. You know, I had all these predictions that it would be Mashpee Wakeby Pond, and there may very well be a nest there that we've been missing for years. I suspect that's probably the case. Or, you know, Long Pond in Harwich. I had my guesses about where there would be, where the first successful nest would be discovered. And it wasn't any of those places.
Yeah. But you just never know.
Yes.
Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org for your bird comments, questions, stories, or if you want to talk about some other critters that you're experiencing, what's happening in your yards. 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I think I told you, Mark, that I had a red-tailed, I sent you a little video a few weeks back, a red-tailed hawk who got a squirrel and sat up in a maple tree in my backyard for a while, and these little robins were just going crazy around it, and so then it finally flew off. Happened again last night. I couldn't tell what it had, and it didn't stay quite as long, and again, the robin's going crazy, and the reason the robins are going crazy is their nest is very close to that maple tree where this red-tailed hawk likes to hang out. And the red-tailed hawk's nest is just a couple houses down the road.
Yeah. I mean, you're living in the red-tailed hawk killing fields there. I mean, geez.
Yes.
Wild America.
Two chicks, yeah.
Falmouth. Very cool.
Yeah, two chicks in the nest. Tell us a little bit about the red-tailed hawks. I mean, how long till they fledge?
How long till they fledge? I can't think of that off the top of my head. Hawks, the bigger the bird, the longer it takes. So a songbird is about a month from laying the eggs to fledging the chicks. But with big birds like great horned owls and ospreys, it's multiple months.
Yeah.
It just takes longer for those chicks to develop. So I don't know. Do you know what stage the nest is in?
I don't. I've seen the nest, but I haven't actually. Somebody else saw the chicks. I didn't see the chicks. So, but once they do fledge, will they be kind of hunting in this area for a while before they move on, or how does that work?
Yes. So apparently it's about a month. So it's sort of like double a songbird. So it's about a month in the egg stage and 4 or 5 weeks to fledge probably. So yeah, and then after that they'll be around for a while, and their hawk chicks are sort of noisy and fun, or noisy and annoying depending on who you are and how close you are to the nest. They make a lot of noise and they're begging. So you picture like a begging songbird, and then picture it the size of a red-tailed hawk, and that just as annoying and hungry and that much louder. So yeah,
well, I can tell you there's a lot less squirrel activity in my yard.
Well, you're living the dream.
Yeah.
most people are like, yeah, I've got a hawk in my yard, but I still see all the same squirrels.
The robin's nest in the yard's is a bonus, as you know, robin being my grandson's favorite bird.
Yes.
So we've been we can't see it's up in a honeysuckle vine, so we can only look up under it. Obviously we don't want to disturb it at all, but we've been sitting back and watching mom and dad kind of sneakily, they kind of go up a couple trees and they jump down on the ground and up into the nest with whatever they've got in their mouths. But yeah, it's fun to watch.
Worms.
Yeah.
Okay. Worms. And that's a fun thing. If you can watch what they're bringing into the nest, maybe their visibility isn't good, like you say, but that's a kind of a fun little study you can do. Like what are they feeding the chicks? What is my neighborhood providing that these birds are using to feed their chicks? That reminds me, I talked about Project Nest Watch before. It's a Cornell project. It's a citizen science project for monitoring bird nests. And anybody can do it. And we do it. I mostly think about it, and most people think about it in the context of, like, bluebird trails. Like at the sanctuary, we monitor a whole bunch of bird boxes with bluebird, and mostly bluebird and tree swallow nests in them. And we submit all that data to Cornell's Project Nest Watch. But any backyard, you can do that for the robin nest. You can submit data, and there's an app. And I played around with the app recently. I was hoping I could use it for our big network of nests at the sanctuary, but it doesn't seem to work that way. But it seems like it would work well for, like, somebody monitoring a cardinal nest in their backyard or a red-tailed hawk nest up the road or something like that. Just you open up the app and you enter some things about the nest, and, it's there forever, and it's the kind of thing where the data is available for researchers to use, just like other citizen science projects like eBird. So I would check that out. App and give that a try. You can submit data on your robin nest.
Yeah, sounds fun. All right, let's talk to Nate, who's giving us a call from Falmouth. Hi, Nate.
Hi.
Hi, yeah, go ahead.
We have a robin's nest under our deck. He found 4 eggs, and a couple days later, there were no eggs. And a few days later, we found 3 eggs, and now there are 4 eggs. What do you think has happened?
So there were eggs, and then there were no eggs. Which time we had the talk? No. There's lots of bad things that can happen to birds' nests, and the good news is that songbirds like robins, they can nest multiple times. A lot of birds, most smaller birds, shorebirds, down at this latitude anyway, songbirds. If something happens to their nest, they can nest again very quickly, and they have this quick nesting cycle. It's like a month long, and so they can they can get off another nesting attempt. And my work over the years, all kinds of things get into birds' nests and will eat the eggs. Mice, chipmunks, snakes, hawks, just any number of things. And birds that nest on the ground are even more vulnerable.
But the good news is there's four back in the nest. Yeah. Yeah.
We found no sign of any animal stealing the eggs.
So just empty nest. It went from eggs to empty nest. Right?
And then we found more eggs.
Oh, and then you found more eggs. Oh, I guess I missed that part. You found more eggs in the same nest.
Yes.
Interesting. Typically, that's not how it works. Generally, songbirds don't reuse the nests. So that's interesting. That'd be something to submit.
Mystery.
Project Nest Watch.
That's a mystery, Nate. Thanks for sharing. Hopefully those little eggs will be okay this time around.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk to Ed, who's giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Ed.
Good morning to you both. We have had appears to be a pair of Baltimore Orioles to the backyard, and we have a jelly feeder out there. It's a simple one. It's just an open dish that hangs from a shepherd's hook. And we noticed it looked like there was nesting material on the feeder. And I consulted with my aunt, who's a fairly knowledgeable birder, and she said perhaps that the female was getting confused between its eating and nesting area. But I wanted to confirm that with you, Mark.
I don't think so. So where is the... They're building a nest, but is it somewhere near the feeder?
No. There was actually what appeared to be nesting material on the feeder itself. Like they were long strands of flexible.
No. I got that part, but I don't. I can't imagine. I've never heard of anything like that. You have to be a pretty confused bird. Is the jelly fermenting? Are you serving them jelly wine, and now you've got drunk Orioles?
No. We were recharging it regularly. So,
yeah, I mean they don't nest low; they nest high. You know, you've seen the nests around. They nest usually fairly high on a branch. Nesting material. It wasn't like the wind blew it there or something. There's no other
because it kept coming back. It was. I'd take it away, and it would be back, and it was. It was, you know, it wasn't anywhere else. It was just in that one specific spot.
Yeah, unless you saw them weaving grass into the feeder. I can't imagine that's what happened, but who knows? The last kid that just called just surprised me about robins laying eggs in the nest that just had the eggs predicted. Yeah.
Okay, we've got mysteries this morning. Yeah. Ed, thanks.
Right, well,
thanks for the call.
Yeah,
let us know if you see anything happening there. Listening to The Point, it's Bird News This Morning with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. So tell us more about this sandhill crane near Barnstable Harbor that seems to be hanging out in people's lawns.
Oh, it just got buzzed by a hummingbird. I've taken it out onto the deck. Let me know if I don't sound good.
No, I sound fine.
Yeah, so this is a strange story. The sandhill crane turned up in Chatham initially, and I was getting these reports and these crazy pictures of a sandhill crane standing on somebody's manicured lawn like a lawn ornament. I'm like, that's not normal. The sandhill crane is a pretty rare bird. It's a bird that I associate with big wild places. It only recently just sort of became a very scarce breeding bird in Massachusetts over the last 15 years, you know, in like, you know, Berkshire County, you know, big kind of remote places, and a big wetland in Hanson Barge Pond Wildlife Management Area. And it's a pretty rare visitor to the Cape. There'll be reports of flybys during migration season, you know, just occasional birds on the ground, but usually just flybys. And so here's this bird just standing around tamely on a lawn in Chatham like a goose. And it ended up in the care of Wildcare in Eastham. And I've been meaning to talk to Stephanie Ellis about what it was that happened with this bird. They gave it some care, and ultimately they released it in Barnstable. And I started getting reports again of this, of a tame sandhill crane. And I was like, what's going on with sandhill cranes? That happened in Chatham too. And it turned out it was the same bird, this friendly sandhill crane. And I can only guess at why it's so tame. And it did have some health issues, but it had to be released. And there it is. It's, you know, it's near Barnstable Harbor somewhere. I haven't been to see it. And it seems like you can go see it without disturbing it so much. You know, I'm not concerned that it's, you know, it's not some skittish wild bird. It seems to obviously tolerate human presence. And so, you know, people have been going to get a rare close look at a sandhill crane, if not a normal kind of wild one. But
they're big birds.
It's a fantastic bird. I mean, they're just... Yeah. They're huge and rare, and why not take a look at it? We wish this bird well. I'm not, you know, good to know what's wrong with it. Maybe it can recover, and I don't know if it'll be less tame. But there it is. Somewhere near Barnstable Harbor.
Okay, let's talk to Doug, who's giving us a call from North Falmouth. Hi, Doug.
Hey, good morning. How are you guys?
Great.
Good.
Cool. I have two questions, if I may. The first one has to do with my backyard. And I noticed a goldfinch, female goldfinch, pulling fibers out of a little swing we have set up by our fire pit, obviously in an attempt to build a nest. I enjoyed watching this happen. And then working in the yard two days ago, I noticed something on the grass, and I go to check it out. And sure enough, it is a... nest that's been, you know, populated by some of these fibers from my swing. And my question is, you know, this bird put a lot of effort into this beautiful nest, and it fell out of the tree? Is it never going to be used? Is there a way, would they come try and can they lift it? Can, you know, is it just something I should keep as something cool to look at, or is it possible that they might come and try and find it and use it?
So they can't reuse the whole thing. Once a nest is down, it's down. And as I said before, typically when a nest has served its purpose, like if, I know this one didn't get that far, but if a nest is, you know, used and they have their chicks and they fledge their chicks and everybody leaves, then songbirds don't go back to that nest. And there are reasons for that. They're full of, it's full of poop and parasites and things like that. Once the chicks have been in there for two weeks, and then a nest that falls down, no, they can't, like, hoist that back up. But I just to back up a little bit, I'm just going to ask you about what the species might have been, because goldfinches nest in, like, August. They don't nest in the spring. And so there's other, you know, I mean, do you have wetlands? Do you have, like, thickety wet areas?
No,
do you have young warblers around?
You know what? And the warbler is a smaller bird, correct?
Yeah, a yellow warbler would be about the size of a goldfinch.
Oh, okay.
And the females, well, the females are like they're a drabber yellow than the male. The male yellow warbler is like a eye-popping yellow with kind of reddish streaks on the breast. And they go around singing quite a bit. They have that loud sweet, 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 and sweet. And the females don't sing. They just chip, and they're like a flatter yellow. And they make nests that they're actually a lot like goldfinch nests. They both tend to be sort of whitish nests, and they'll use various fibers in them.
I also do a little bit of fiberglass work, and there's fibers from the white rope that's hanging with the string, and then there's also some fiberglass cloth fibers that are in the nest. And it's beautiful to look at. It's amazing how they do it. But yeah, I'm about a mile from estuary ocean. So I wouldn't call that close as far as a bird goes. And
yellow warblers like they're pretty tolerant of invasive species. So they're common in kind of tangly thickets full of invasive honeysuckle and stuff like that. But they also like nice swampy, thickety areas. Huh. It tends to be somewhere that's somewhat wet, or there's some kind of a low, wettish thicket.
I wouldn't put my place.
It could be some other species
like
as well.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Yeah.
So
well, what's your second question, Doug?
Well, my second
question.
You said
question you had
is,
two.
Yeah. Ocean bird. Big white, big, large wingspan bird with black tips that is seen here diving from incredible heights to get after fish, either super early in the spring, and then also I see it in the fall, I think, as well.
I'm going to try Mindy on this one. What do you think, Mindy?
Oh.
He knows already.
I don't know.
Quiznio, I
think. Osprey, I don't know.
No, it's a gannet. Osprey. Northern gannet.
Gannet, yeah. Okay.
Northern gannet is the seabird. Yeah, the seabird with the big white seabird with the black tip wings, big spectacular birds. They torpedo down from great heights and dive for fish. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because at first I thought it was because they fly around like a shearwater. They hug the wave crests and use the lift from the waves to zip around and look, and then they do these crazy loops up and some huge dives. Okay, so gannet.
Exactly.
Thanks for
That's
confirming
good,
that.
Great
I appreciate
description.
That.
Yep.
All right, Doug.
Very good
thanks for the phone call. Yeah. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Alicia writes, I'm with your grandson. I'm from Massachusetts. When I retired, I went to Texas for a winter birding in a camper van. I was surprised at how many robins I saw in the desert in Big Bend National Park. Then as I drove northward in March, all along my path between Texas and Massachusetts were robins, especially in the Carolinas. Then at home to regroup for my summer volunteer job in Yellowstone National Park, my yard here in Rochester had several robins. I drove the northern route to get to Montana. More robins each night of camping, Michigan, Wisconsin, South Dakota. I reached my cabin where I spend my summer in Lamar Valley at 7,000 feet elevation. There are 5 nesting pairs of robins on our group of cabins, the most beautiful sound in a soundless environment at 4 a.m. Thanks for sharing. So another robin fan.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good description of the broad range of robins. I mean, robins nest up into Alaska and in mountains in Mexico, the piney kind of high, cooler, higher elevation mountains in Mexico. Big Bend is interesting. I've been to Big Bend. It's a desert, mostly a desert park, but with some mountain kind of wooded habitat. Yeah, it's not a place I think of for robins, but they're everywhere. And yes, when you travel south in the winter, if you road trip south through the Carolina, along the East Coast, there'll be big flocks of robins on the median strips and moving around and eating crab apples, just like here on the Cape. Mm-hmm. I think we didn't used to have so many wintering robins here, but now we have more. But yeah, they're a very successful, very widespread bird and a nice, familiar, comforting presence just about everywhere you go. And she's right. It is a great song.
Nice song. Yeah. All right. Wayne writes, I was pleased to see our migrating birds return, and they were very vocal, visible, and active for a while. Many male hummingbirds at my feeder, towhees in the bush, orioles, catbirds, etc. Then the leaves came out. Up until just recently, I had not seen hummingbirds at my feeder for about 2 weeks, although I did see them occasionally perusing my flowers. Activity was much lower with other species everywhere. Is it because it became the quiet of the nesting season, or is there plenty of food around? It wasn't until last night that I noticed a hummingbird buzzed my feeder again. Is this a lull? Is this lull a cycle? I've heard some other people say that there were all the hummingbirds. It's just that there's a lot of food around, right?
It's hard to say. I mean, I go through the same thing, and you get these periods where, like last year was a very strange year with the hummingbirds. Mine disappeared for a while, and I was hearing that from lots and lots of people. This year I've heard a few people say that, but mine are around every day. And as usual, I catch the female collecting spider webs at the forest floor just outside our backyard here. and there I've got both a male and a female hummingbird this year. Usually I just see a female. So basically what I'm saying is it's different every year. I'm not aware of a clear pattern. And these things are very local. So In May, things are moving around, things are arriving, things are figuring out where they want to nest. And so, you know, like the great crested flycatchers were spending a lot of time in my yard when they first arrived, but then they ended up nesting in a box in the neighbor's yard. And then something might have happened to that nest because all of a sudden they were back in my yard instead of, you know, just one, they were both together, meaning they weren't incubating eggs. So something might have happened to the nest and they were poking around in our nest boxes. And so I went out and I was like, oh, no. We don't have a great crested flycatcher box, and so I'm taking a drill bit, awkwardly enlarging the holes of our bluebird boxes that bluebirds never used. You know, I took off the predator guard, like maybe. So you know, it depends on their nesting cycles and where they settle in. You know, the orioles will be moving around, and then they find a mate. They do their nest site searching. They pick somewhere to nest, and if it's not your yard, maybe you don't see them as much, and they have a different kind of feeding route that they go on. You know, but again, every year is different, and I've had terrible luck getting orioles to come to oriole feeders. They really just become catbird feeders, and I'll hear the oriole singing up in the tree above it, you know, different times during the summer, but they never come to my feeder. But all of a sudden, like 2 days ago, a female oriole started coming to our jelly feeder, and then the male, and suddenly it's like an everyday thing. So it could change. So just keep on looking.
Yep. Wayne's got a second question. He says, when my bluebirds fledge a box, can I clean it out without disrupting anything?
Disrupting anything? Yeah. Once they're done, they're done. Yeah, you could clean it out if you wanted. Yeah, they're not gonna.
Okay.
They won't reuse that nest. But again, proving that I don't know anything really. But yeah, if they fledge chicks, they're definitely not going to reuse a nest they fledge chicks from, because as I said before, and anybody who's monitored a nest, a songbird nest after they're done with it that's had chicks in it for 2 weeks is disgusting.
Yeah.
Imagine all your children at the same time in a 4-inch by 4-inch square that they never were able to leave. You know,
not good. Yeah.
Let's
talk to Peter, who's calling from Marion. Hi, Peter.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Morning.
Okay, I've got a couple things. The first, we have an unusual woodpecker. It's between the size of a hairy and a red-breasted, and it's black, and it's, instead of being white, it's yellowish. And it has a little, you know, the head is sort of shaped like a pileated woodpecker. It's got a little red tuft on its head, but it's something I can't find in any book. It's really, I can't imagine what it is.
This is a common inquiry that I've gotten over the years, the dreaded, I've got a different woodpecker. And I have the hardest time figuring out what people are talking about usually. And this may be just a hairy woodpecker. There's not much difference in size between a hairy woodpecker and a red-bellied woodpecker. Red-bellied is a little bit bigger. But there's no woodpecker that's in between those two. This is just one of the common woodpeckers that you know, is giving you a different look somehow. And the hairy woodpeckers are sometimes like a brownish, yellowish tinge to the white feathers.
Okay.
Almost a sooty look. I mean, that's a possibility.
It's a dirty yellow, but it's very, I mean, the entire bird, instead of being white, has this yellowish tinge to it. And, you know, that was one of my thoughts. So Peter,
are you able to get a picture of it?
We haven't. It's been around for a couple of weeks, but it comes and goes. But my thought initially was that it was just some sort of variant of a hairy.
Exactly. I'm sure your instincts were probably right, because that is a thing. And the hairies tend to be the ones that have this weird alternate plumage where the white parts are dirty looking. It's
okay,
more common.
Another thing, an earlier caller had mentioned a jelly feeder where nesting material seemed to have been brought to the feeder.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Don't tell me you saw that too.
Had the same situation where we had a, you know, jelly feeder for orioles, and we had great orioles for like 2 weeks, and then they all left, and the catbirds continue to eat from the, you know, jelly feeders, and they've kind of taken over our yard. They chase all the other birds.
Yes.
But I was thinking, you know, maybe crow-like, and I think it probably the catbirds, but they brought probably 6 or 7 different strands of material and left it on the jelly feeder.
Well, it's interesting. Here's a theory. So these are absent-minded birds, and they're building their nest, but then they're like, hey, jelly. And so they stop by, they put down the grass, and then they leave without, you know, it's like one of those catbirds that can never find its car keys. Or whatever.
They take over the yard.
Yeah,
they're more
Peter,
like
thanks
people,
for the
more
call.
Like people than we realize, and I'm sure there are forgetful birds.
Yeah, thanks for the call. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News this morning with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I got a few emails here. Lisa in Plymouth writes, for the past week, I've had a female goldfinch collecting nest material from a bag I hang on my back porch. I thought it was a bit early, but it's definitely a goldfinch, and she did send a photo. So
that does look like a goldfinch. It's upside down. The photo's upside down. I'll have to look at it on my phone later, figure out it. But it does look like a goldfinch. And so they, I don't know what it's doing. They typically nest in later, like it's later in summer. They're our latest nesting songbird, and it's because they don't feed their chicks insects. They're one of the few songbirds that don't. They really just feed them seeds. And that's very, very unusual. And so they're waiting for some of these plants to go to seed, some of these flowers. Mm-hmm. And as you know, it's pretty early. It's not a lot has gone to seed. So there wouldn't be much for them to feed their chicks if they were nesting now. And so they wait till July and August. But, yeah, I don't know. That does look like a goldfinch. I'm standing upside down in my room looking at the photo.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, this little goldfinch is just getting ahead of the game. I sent you another photo. Jenna in Wellfleet sent us a photo, and she said, this bird visited my jelly feeder in Wellfleet for 3 days last month and then disappeared. I've never seen one like it before. My best guess at an ID is that it's an immature male summer tanager, probably blown off course by that storm you discussed in one of your reports. Can you tell me what you think it is?
Yeah, I think it's an immature male summer tanager.
So she's right.
Boy, it's got a funny, I'm looking at the photo right now, and so this is like a medium-sized bird with a cardinal-sized bird with a heavy bill, but not quite cardinal depth bill, and a red face. It's crazy looking. It's kind of a pale collar and yellow undertail coat. But in breeding plumage, some male summer tanager is all red. Like every feather is red. But leading up to breeding season, you'll get young males are sort of blotchy. and so that's what this was. And there were a lot of summer tanagers for some reason this spring.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, there seem to be more and more of them. It's a southern bird that does not breed this far north, but we get them every spring as overshoots. It's almost expected, you know, and if you go out birding several times during the course of the spring, you'll find a summer tanager somewhere.
Yeah, I haven't seen one yet.
Feeders. Yeah, they're not. They're still pretty rare. But a lot of people got them at their feeders this year and sent photos. You know, it's great that people have, you know, phone cameras now. Mm-hmm. It's easy for people to get photos and send along mystery birds rather than try to describe them, which is always tough. And so, yeah, that's a male summer tanager.
Okay.
And a lot of people were getting scarlet tanagers at their oranges. You know, you put out the orange for the oriole, and several people sent me photos of, or posted them online, of scarlet tanagers sitting at their orange that they put out for their oriole. I don't know how much they eat them, but it was enough that I put out an orange half, and I haven't done that in years. Like, geez, scarlet tanager, I guess I should put out an orange.
Yeah, I never know, right? All right, let's talk to Sally, who's giving us a call from Eastham. Hi, Sally.
Hey, hi. I so love this program. Thank you so much. So we've been listening to the birds at night, sitting out, you know, listening to the birds, and I can't identify this song. Dee, 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 dee.
Hmm. Is that,
does that sound familiar? Those repeated notes. Dee, 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 dee.
Well, it's a nice tune. You're singing well.
Yeah. Beethoven about it, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You said this is, you're hearing this at night?
At night. Well, you know, dusk, when all the birds are calling to each other.
My guess is it's part of a Song Sparrow song. I keep getting fooled, right? I hear something, and Song Sparrow songs, they sort of, the general pattern is, Madge, 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 please put on the tea kettle. At least that's what my ornithology professor in college said it sounded like. A lot of things were tea kettles with the early naturalists going around drinking their tea. So that's why Carolina ran and say, tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle. And they drink your tea. There's all these British guys coming up with these mnemonics. And so the song sparrows say, Madge, 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 please put on the tea kettle. But there's a lot of variation to it. It's a rich song with these trills in it. And I find that there'll be parts of the song that stand out more than others. It sounds like, you know, one of the phrases really stands out. I mean, that's one guess. I can't think of anything that's what their song is like.
Yeah, we went to the All About Birds and tried to identify the different songs of the common birds. We didn't come up with that one. I just thought I'd give a call this morning.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Sally. Appreciate that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Sally. We've got a few emails here I want to get to.
Hold on. Yeah. She'd be a test case for this Song Sleuth app. Where you're supposed to hold, you know, and I think it would have trouble with that if it wasn't the full beginning to end Song Sparrow song, but maybe it could pick it out. I haven't had great luck with it. I don't think the technology is quite yet there, but there is an app called Song Sleuth, and I think there are others where, you know, what people have been asking for years, where you hold up the phone and it gives you some guesses on what the song is that you're hearing.
All right. So Joe in Wacoit says, I've experienced disappearing birds with the Baltimore Orioles in my backyard. They first showed up in early May, then appeared more and more frequently, often 20 times a day. And then as May turned to June, they became less and less frequent, and I haven't seen one for several days now. If prior year experience repeats, I won't see an Oriole in my backyard until next May. And then Kat writes, we love seeing and hearing the Carolina Wrens. They have visited our yard year-round for many years. They're very fun to watch, but we haven't seen any at all this spring. Any ideas about this change? We live in Barnstable.
So first for Orioles, a lot of people report this. They say, I see my Orioles in the spring, and then they go away, and I don't see them again for the rest of the summer. They're probably still around. They're a pretty common neighborhood breeding bird. If there are shade trees, they'll build nests along suburban roads and shade trees. You know, they're not uncommon. It may just be learning what they sound like and realizing that they just moved a few houses down and you're not seeing them in your yard so much anymore, but they're around. I often have that experience where they're really around, they're moving through the neighborhood a lot before they've established a territory, they're, you know, looking for where the food is, they're looking for mates, and then they sort of settle down and they stop coming to your yard and they have a different route that they do that's in a different part of the neighborhood. But I hear them. I hear them, you know, six houses down, I can hear a male Oriole. And so if you really learn all of their sound, you might realize that they are still around. As far as Carolina wrens, you know, most neighborhoods should have a Carolina wren if you listen, and they don't migrate. And so that's why when we have a harsh winter, their population goes down, because they're a southern bird that has only recently colonized the Northeast, and so they're vulnerable to harsh winters. But we certainly didn't have a harsh winter, and that's just one of these local phenomena you can't explain. Like, again, you know, they moved a few houses down, they're nesting in a different part of your neighborhood or next neighborhood over or something like that. But usually Carolina wrens are, after some bad winters several years ago, they have built their populations back up, and they're pretty dense in you know, just about every yard, you should be able to hear a Carolina wren from your yard.
I, Let's see, I agree with Kat. They're fun to watch. I love those little Carolina wrens. They're so cute.
Oh, they're great. And I don't know what happened if they maybe, and they nest early. So our neighborhood ones might have fledged some chicks because all of a sudden the other morning there was one sitting just right outside the kitchen window on the hook that the hummingbird feeder is on, just belting out a song, you know, the whole thing, like throwing the head back and belting out that incredibly loud. I mean, for a tiny bird, it's like they have a megaphone built in, just decal, decal, decal. So I grabbed Beckett, flew away. I really enjoyed the year that we had them nesting in the flower box attached to the wall of the, you know, the side of the house right outside our back door. And so they're very friendly and confiding, and they are a lot of fun to have around. I agree.
Yeah. Christy in Wareham writes, for years we've had two osprey nests across a small estuary off Buzzards Bay in Wareham. This year, four osprey returned. However, two on one of the nests never built. They would fly and fish and sometimes seem to fight with the other nest. Do you think this was a young pair still looking for a place to settle? Wonder where last year's birds went.
Mm. Yeah, that's a good guess. When the osprey population was just building back up on the Cape, there was more territoriality, say 20 years ago, you know, even 10, 15 years ago. If you asked people that watched ospreys and paid attention to the recovery, it's, oh, yeah, you can't put up a pole within sight of another pole because the two pairs will just fight and they won't actually get down to nesting. That has long since broken down. There are so many ospreys on the Cape now, especially the upper and mid-Cape, kind of the south shoreline of the Cape. And, there are so many. And places like the outer Capes, they're still relatively uncommon just because there aren't that many places to put up poles out here. But certainly out that way. And Wareham, I would think, would have tons, and I wouldn't think territoriality would be a big thing. So maybe some combination of territoriality and young, inexperienced birds could explain that. As to what happened to last year's birds, that's a question. Usually once they get an established nest, and if they're successful, the pair will keep coming back year after year. So that is unusual to have an active one year. It does happen, and it's hard to know why.
Yeah. All right. Marilyn in Chatham writes, wondering if this could be a case with, she's talking about now the nesting material on the oriole, the jelly feeders. Wondering if this could be a case where the oriole goes to the jelly gets stuck on its feet, then the oriole goes back to its nest, and the nesting material gets stuck to the feet. When they go back to the jelly feeder, the nesting material gets left on it. I thought that Mark had said in a previous show that we really shouldn't use jelly when the nesting starts because it can mess up their feathers and nest.
I hadn't heard that. If you Google around, maybe it says that somewhere. I have not seen catbirds or orioles having trouble. And I guess my particular feeder is in a cage, so really they're only able to get their head and beak in there to get the jelly. I can't imagine. I guess it's possible that they could get into it and get sticky on their feathers. But I don't know. I had not heard of that being a major issue. But that is certainly an elaborate theory as to how the nesting material. It's a little more thinky than my forgetful catbird theory or forgetful oriole.
But
you know, come on. You're walking across the office. You're doing something, right? There's a reason that you're up and walking around, and then you're like, hey, donut, and then you totally forget what you're doing. So I think that oriole is like, I'm building a nest. I'm building a nest. Hey, jelly. And then they put down the grass and they eat the jelly and then they leave without it.
Yeah.
Just like
so we should, I know we've been talking about birds all this hour, but we should mention turtles because now we're starting to see some turtle activity, right? And we want to help them across the road, but we don't want to bring them to another area if we see turtles in the road, right?
Yes. Yeah. So the standard thing to do, the standard protocol is to help it across the road. So pick up that snapping turtle by the head. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. Most people have enough sense to not stay away from the business
end of
a big snapping turtle. And so with the case of all the aquatic turtles, these turtles that you're seeing out and about are females. and they're extremely important to the population. And I mean, things like painted turtles and snapping turtles are incredibly common, but we have some less common turtles around here. You know, diamondback terrapins out here in Wellfleet and other places. Box turtles are still relatively uncommon. Box turtles could be males or females because they're not aquatic. They're both out and about. And so just, you know, move them to the other side of the road where they were going. And then hopefully somebody else does it when they're heading back. Because often it's a female turtle that's going somewhere, often surprisingly far from water, to nest. And then they go back to the pond or the swamp or whatever. And so in some cases, they're crossing a road twice. And so they might need two Good Samaritans or just to be lucky. But turtles, like rare turtles, things like Blanding's turtles and the kind of Metro West area of the state, when they look at what's happening with their populations, why they're uncommon, road mortality of females is often the biggest factor in their population declines. Because you think about a long-lived animal like a turtle, and female gets hit by a car in a nesting run, you lose all of her years of breeding potential. So that's not very good for population. So help those turtles cross the road.
Mm. And we're also seeing a lot of butterflies returning. I haven't seen a monarch yet, but I have seen a swallowtail soaring through the garden.
Yeah. The tiger swallowtails have been out and about. I've been seeing some spicebush swallowtails, pearl crescents, American coppers. Several things around. It doesn't really heat up around here until July, but it's nice. It's nice to see the big flashy ones like the tiger swallowtails now, that they tend to be associated with when the lilacs bloom. They've been out since before then, but that's one of those kind of like, you know, the herring run when the shadbush blooms kind of things. It's nice. I mean, everything that's happening is just fantastic. It's just such a great time of year. Our gardens, the birds coming back, the song, the butterflies. It's just after a long, bleak winter, it's just all good for the soul.
Yeah, and I would just say, I think it's interesting just kind of watching some of the Facebook posts and things. I think so many people now are at home and able to really get a look at the nature that's happening in their yards, and it's really fun to see these photos and stuff that everyone is posting and noticing.
That's something I wanted to talk about. Yeah, I'm wondering about that because, you know, are people getting more into birding? And I've seen some articles here and there. More people are getting into birding and just kind of like backyard natural history and that sort of thing. And boy, I hope so. One of my goals is to get people looking at this stuff right in their own backyards and as kind of a gateway to becoming more of an amateur naturalist and just seeing, developing those eyes and ears to see and hear the diversity of things that are around us that most people have no clue about. Maybe that's one kind of silver lining of all of this people being forced to pay more attention to their own backyard.
Mark Verity, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. As always, thank you, Mark.
Thank you. See you next time.
I'm Indy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.